Hi there, I'm Krish Saroy and welcome to the Sacred Wild Podcast. Each week I show you how to live your purpose and discover your own sacred wild spirit. On the podcast we explore the nexus point where nature, consciousness, leadership and activism come together. I talk with thought leaders to get their insights and wisdom about our collective transformation. I also show you how to own your power, give your gifts and make your highest impact on this world. So with that, let's dive into this next episode. So welcome everyone to the Sacred Wild Podcast. I'm really pleased to have, and I always say I have special guests on, but this one, this person is very, very special. So today we have Diana Fradgman on. So Diana, hi, lovely to see you.
Hello, hello. Pleasure to be here.
So Diana is one of what I call my witchy sisters in British Columbia. So for those of you out there that listen in regularly and know me, you know that British Columbia is kind of really where I go to do all my spiritual work. It's kind of like where my soul kind of comes home to, as it were. And I have a number of four ladies in particular who are very close spiritual friends, but Diana is by far and away the most regular witchy sister I keep in contact with. She regularly kicks my ass on a, if there's someone who keeps me honest, it's Diana. And I couldn't wait to get onto the podcast today. So Diana, just by way of introduction, just give us kind of a little bit about who you are and what you get up to in the world.
Well, I am live on Vancouver Island in British Columbia. I am I consider myself a crone, and I am a coach and a mentor, and I also do intuitive tarot readings here. And I coach mostly women who are mature, who are launching their own personal businesses. Maybe it's a healing modality, astrology, tarot reading, even coaching. And they need help with the marketing of it, because it's a pretty daunting task to sort of put yourself out there at a later stage in life.
Mm-hmm. I really get that. So two things I want to pick up on there. First of all, there'll be a lot of people out there that may have heard the word crone before, but don't necessarily know what it is. So can you kind of give us a little bit of a definition, as it were?
Sure. I'll give you the short definition. And that is the absolute simplest definition is that it is a post-menstrual woman. So it's a woman who is in menopause, who no longer able to bear children. That's the simple version of it. The traditional version of it would have been, in old times when there were small villages, she would have been the wise woman in the village. Mm. So she would have been one of the elders who was very knowledgeable in healing, in midwifery. She had the ability to be, a judge and counselor, and she was highly respected. In modern times, crone is reemerging. It's sort of had a bad rap, in the last century or so. It's looked upon just like witches, which was, had a bad rap too. And it's really coming back into its, strength again. A crone is just an older, wise woman who has gone through life and acquired a lot of wisdom in her particular, modality, in her interests, in her career. And now she's at a point now where she's no longer limited to society's boundaries. And she's done everything that society's expected of her. She's had children, she's had a career, probably got married, maybe not. And now she is doing things for herself, and she's giving back with the knowledge that she's gained. So she's a wise woman. She is a healer in a sense, because she's healing by giving forth her knowledge. So she might be mentoring people coming up. She might be, going out and now exploring maybe the fringes of whatever her interests are. But she is somebody who is out in the community offering you know, her knowledge and leaving that legacy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that. I love that. And the other piece I want to pick up on, and I'm going to come back to the crone and the wise woman in a moment as, sure. As an archetype. But, you know, you said earlier about, you know, helping women in that kind of area who are setting out, they need marketing help and that kind of, but I know for a fact that you are not like a marketing coach or a marketing guru. That's not what you do. So give us give us what you really do.
I give them confidence. I get them to realize really what their strengths are, and empower them to believe in themselves. My business, my website is Crone Confidence. Mm-hmm. And really, you know, most women are nurturers, especially if they've been through the mother archetype. So they're, you know, the trinity of women's stages in life, which would have been the maiden, mother crone. You know, so if she's just come out of the mother archetype and has spent the last 20 years in service to others, nurturing others, she has put herself second. And so a crone has to reemerge your true self again and put yourself first again. And so a lot of times that's what I'm doing, is just getting them to believe in their knowledge, in their skills, and in their ability, and to be able to put that out there and show them how to put it out there. So yeah, you know, marketing is a buzzword, but you know, the reality is, you know, you have to show up and you have to show yourself out into the world. So there is ways that you do that, but mostly you're absolutely right. It's confidence I give them.
I love that. I love that. One of the things you talked about there was, you know, their true selves. You know, one of the things that we talk about here on the Sacred Wild podcast is, you know, unearthing our true nature, both in terms of in relation to nature, but our true nature as well. So tell us a little bit more about that emerging into true self piece. What are some of the boundaries or barriers that these kind of ladies have faced kind of coming into this stage?
Well, I mean, you know, I can only speak for myself. You have society that you have to play within. So there's always been social expectations of females, you know, play nice, be pretty, don't be bossy, have an opinion. And then you have the nurturing aspect where it's, you know, put everybody else first, because, you know, sacrifice for your children, sacrifice for your husband, sacrifice for your job. And women get to a point where they go, you know, like, hey, is there, what's for me? And so every woman goes through a bit of a transition. I'm, you know, like I said, I can only speak from a woman's perspective. So I'm sure men do it too, I'm sure. But they go through a transition where, they realize, hey, you know, if I'm going to, you get to a point where you go, I only have so much life left. What about me? What do I want? And wow. So you do a bit of a self-discovery and go out and learn what it is you want to do and what you like and what you used to like. Because a lot of times those things get buried. Those things that were innate when you were a teenager, when you had the freedom to explore, and the constructs of society wasn't, you know, pressuring you to perform and do things. And then you might take up a practice or a modality that you had in your youth, or you may just go out and explore other things. And so, a lot of people sort of take that transition time. It might be a year, it might be 5 years, who knows, where they go out and explore and just try different things. And a lot of times people will call it a midlife crisis, right?
Of course.
But really what it is the transition into your elder, you know, whether it's being a crone, whether it's being a sage, a wise man, a wise woman, what grandparent even. That time it's getting you ready to be in that position where then now you are fully evolved and you can go out and do what really truly what you were meant to do.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And it's almost just a little bit later than the archetypal midlife crisis, isn't it? Which I think for a lot of people, you know, this kind of think of it as being early 40s, whereas kind of here we're talking about, I mean, you said earlier about, like, you know, post-menstrual and all that kind of thing, entering into elderhood.
Yeah.
It's almost like the empty nester, the,
yep.
the, you know, that, that kind of thing. And it's a, you know.
Well, I always say that, you know, and, you know, it's been my experience. Most women do this between 45 and 50. And, okay. And, you know, it's just because by that time your children are of, if you have children, your children are of an age where now they're quite capable of looking after themselves if they haven't already left the nest. And, you know, you get to the point where you start, you know, thinking, well, what do I want in life? And I always say the hardest question a person will ever ask themselves is, what is it that I truly want? Because when you are at that stage and you have done everything for everybody else, that's a very selfish question. And I mean it in a way of going to self, not being selfish as in, you know, greedy and thinking of yourself. Yeah. And that's a hard thing to do, because the first thing you'll do is you'll go, well, what will other people think? Or, you know, what will my children or my family or my husband or, you know, my friends think if I all of a sudden decide I want to, I don't know, you know, sell my house and go off and travel in a caravan for 6 months, whatever it is that mm-hmm. you decide to mm-hmm. do. And it takes some guts to do that. And a lot of people, yeah. you know, and there's an innate drive in you that's pushing you to do that.
I love that. I love yeah. that. So, I mean, you said earlier when I was asking a question that you can only speak for yourself. So clearly, this is a journey you have been on. And I think, you know, we can't teach what we haven't learned kind of thing. So what was your journey into this kind of stage?
Well, when I was about 45, I had a couple of things happen. I had some personal situations where I lost my mom. My son and my husband were in a serious car accident.
Oh, wow.
I lost my father-in-law. I was working at a very high stress job, and I was a total bitch because I was just totally strung out and a lot of things coming at me at all at once and not able to handle it. I ended up getting fired from that job, which was, in retrospect, the best thing that ever happened. But of course,
a blessing.
But you know, at the time, you know, it's one of those things where you think, oh, now this too kind of thing. But it gave me a chance to sort of go, okay, I had enough wisdom at that point in time that I knew that this was, you know, a sign. This was pushing me somewhere else that I needed to be, I didn't need to be there. And at that time, so I took, you know, I mean, I did go on and work other places, but I took much less stressful jobs, lower paying jobs, less stressful jobs, just to sort of just keep the wolves from the door, but also just to give myself some breathing space. Mm. And obviously I had family that had to be taken care of as well. But at the same time, I had a major sign happen, and it was an owl that came to rest on my flag post that's on my sun deck. And I had never experienced an owl do that before. I mean, there's owls in my neighborhood and what have you, but this owl landed on this flag post and stayed there for a good half an hour, to the point where I, you know, I actually got within feet of him, took pictures of him.
And
exactly. And it was one of those, you know, moments where you go, you just know that this is a sign. This is a major sign. This is, a spirit, a guide, that there's, you know, like at that point in time, I wasn't smart enough to understand it in, you know, deep metaphysical senses, but I just knew that this was something, this was a sign.
Yeah.
And it just released me into starting to get curious about other things. Really, it did, you know? And so that really was the catalyst that started the journey, you know, like the situation with family and job, that was the, you know, as they call it, the dark night of the soul. That was the break that I needed to be, you know, the universe had been nudging me and I was ignoring it. And so I'm a firm believer that the universe is always speaking to you and mm-hmm. giving little whispers and little hints and little, and if you don't listen, it ups the ante. And it's a little louder. And if you still don't listen, it smacks you up the side of the head and says, pay attention. And that's what that was. It was a smack, you're not paying attention. So
I know this sounds like every time you coach me.
Well, you know, Krish, what can I say?
Anyway.
So anyways, that's how the journey started.
Got it. Yeah. So you act as a guide for women at this stage of life, as it were, at this stage of emergence, I think mm-hmm. is a word that's been.
That's a good word, yeah.
But, you know, did you have any like mentors, guides on your journey, or was it just something you figured out along the way, or?
You know, it's funny. I've not had a lot of guides, but I've had a lot of what I call, you know, human angels come along and you know, point me in another direction. I clicked on with a metaphysical group about a couple of years after, you know, I started on this journey and got a huge, what it was confirmation that I wasn't alone, really what it was. And I only was with that group for about a year. I met some great people and that are still friends to this day with me. But it was just one of those ones that, oh, I'm not alone. You know, there are other people who are on this a similar journey. And, it was just sort of that little boost you needed to go to the next level. As far as mentoring other people, you know, I look at it as I had to sort of, you know, pick my way through the rubble of the path to get where I wanted to go. Mm. And so in doing so, I blazed a bit of a trail. So why not be a guide to help those people get through at least that rough patch till they get to their next stage? Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. I love that. And I also know that, you know, we've talked a little bit about the crone, the wise woman, mm-hmm. as it were. And actually, I want to pick up on that before I go to the next place.
Yeah.
You know, we are in a society, I mean, you and I have had this conversation kind of over coffee and stuff around, we're in a society that really seems to value youth. And so those you referenced earlier, like the triple aspect, the maiden, the mother and the crone.
Yeah.
So we definitely celebrate the maiden.
Yes.
Maybe to some degree celebrate the mother. Mm-hmm. But the crone has kind of got lost, I think, is, you know, what I'm taking from what you've said.
Yeah.
But you said it's re-emerging now. Why is now the right time for the return of the crone or the wise woman?
Well, in order for that to be explained, you have to go back to, believe it or not, to the early 60s.
Okay.
And you need to also go to the baby boomer generation. So the baby boomer generation is from 1946 to 1964. And those are the post-war boom of population that was, because of men returning from war, society becoming affluent again, a rebuilding. And so along came babies as well. But the early 60s, the reason that's a major factor is because I think it was 1963, the birth control pill came onto the market. What that did was it gave women freedom. And so the early part, there's two segments to the baby boomers. There's the early baby boomers. So when the pill finally came out on the market and really came out, you know, became quite widely spread, the early part of the baby boomers were, you know, in the early 20s. Mm-hmm. And so those would have been the ones that you would consider the hippies and, freedom, summer of loves and that kind of thing. They were the ones out there exploring and they had that freedom now because they weren't going to get pregnant. They could take the pill and they could go out and explore their sexuality and, you know, explore, you know, the break free from the social confines that had been, foisted on women in the 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the second group of baby boomers like myself, because I'm in the late part of baby boom, who by the time we got into our 20s, that bit of path had already been blazed. So we already had that element of the taboo being broken of sexuality. Mm-hmm. So we could go out and now venture out into the man's world and bust the glass ceilings for career.
Yeah. So
before that, women only really had, a couple of choices if they wanted to be career women. They had nurse, teacher, secretary, and none. Pretty much. None of the above. No, none as an N-U-N.
No, I know.
But anyways, so, they didn't really have a lot of choices. After the pill came along, what the pill did is it bought them time. So what it did was it gave women a chance to, in their youth, explore their sexuality with not the fear of becoming a woman or becoming a mother, I should say.
So
she could go out, she could, explore her sexuality, but she had time now to get educated, right? Because she could go and do both now. Mm-hmm. So what happened was the 60s brought on, women's lib in the early 70s. And, the working girl in the 80s and, we were out there making our mark in the world. But this was a youth generated group at this time. The baby boomers were, in their 20s, 30s, at the very most 40s. Mm. So they're youth based. And so they were empowered by that youth. And that's where the whole youth, focused. Keep your youth because, you're empowered with it. So, So of course now we are, wanting to keep this youth because, hey, we like this. We like being empowered and women, waited longer to get married and they got great careers and a lot of them didn't get married. But the ones that did get married, they moved on to motherhood. But even at that, they still wanted that career. They still wanted their foot in that field of society that they never had access to before, which was career and policy making and being out there and contributing. And so you got that happening until the 80s and the 90s and even in the early part of the 2000s. Those women now, those baby boomers, are now 55 plus, right? We're 56 to 74 now. So here you've got now a large segment of the population who are prone age. They're highly educated. A lot of them have their own money. So they're not beholden to a man. They've raised independent children. They're widely traveled and they're healthy. Because the advent of technology in the field of medicine has meant that we are healthy living, later in our lives. And it's interesting, the biggest growing demographic of age is centenarians because of the advent of health and we're knowledgeable enough to look after ourselves, we're living longer. So it makes sense that the crones now are a force to be reckoned with because here you've got a group who blazed trails for every other woman, in independence and, confidence. And now they're older and they're in a group, they're in a age group where they're just confident anyways, because they've reached that mastery of life. So,
yeah.
But now they also have the tools to actually do something with that mastery of life. They've got money and they've got smarts and they've got the ability to, well, maybe not this year with the pandemic, but they usually have the ability to travel and get out there into the world. And so it makes sense that for a woman, if she in the 60s had the ability to be empowered with freedom, her own freedom of self. So she had the ability to have control of her reproductive system and freedom of self, that to embody the woman fully, she has to do the full cycle, which is maiden, mother, crone. And so the baby boomers now are creating the final cycle of that, which is the crone and the empowered wise woman.
That makes, I'd never even thought about it that way, but it makes such complete sense. And given this generation and giving, you know, the notion of, you know, clearly we're talking broadly about demographic, but within that crone, we've talked about like the wise woman, as it were. And, you know, clearly not every person of a certain age is necessarily the wise woman, and in the same way that not every man of a certain age is a sage, as
right,
it were.
Yeah, right.
You know, but we are seeing the emergence of the wise woman again, I would contend, as it were.
I would say that, but the thing is, that's a small perspective of it, because you've got now you've got a group now that are very diverse and educated in many different aspects, as opposed to just the teacher, the nurse, the secretary, you know, the spiritual nun, right? Now you've got women who are, you know, scientists and doctors and you know, astronauts and mechanics, and so they're wise within their realm.
Okay.
So the platform is spread out. It's not just wise and just life skills. It's wise in their modalities of their adulthood. And so it's not that they can mentor a woman who's coming up in, say, you know, a non-traditional female role. They can mentor them because they blazed that trail. And so there's huge wisdom in that, right? And that's a legacy that they're giving back. And so, like I said, so the wisdom platform has spread out.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So, you know, kind of let's kind of talk about that then, the, you know, the cross-generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we are in a society that values youth, and you know, you've given a very eloquent explanation around that. And I happen to know that as well as mentoring kind of crones, you do mentor younger women as well, as it were. So I guess, you know, there's a whole bunch of questions around that, but you know, part of the spiritual community kind of age Aquarius kind of thing, whatever, is the notion of, you know, awareness, consciousness in youth is much higher now than it was as we were kind of growing up, kind of thing. So I'm sort of curious around this whole dynamic around, what do you find mentoring younger women, say in their late 20s, early 30s? Do you notice differences to when you were at that age, or and what kind of things do you notice there in terms of how you mentor?
You know what, I think in one way things haven't changed, in the sense that when you're a young person, you know, you are full of life and full of you know, possibility, and maybe not as, you know, you're more apt to take the leap as opposed to overthink things. But there's also that level of, you know, not knowing where you fit in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And so even though, especially on social media, even though we can project ourselves to be very confident, and we can show ourselves as anybody we want to be, there's still you know, the little girl inside of you, or the little boy inside of you, that, you know, am I doing right? You know, am I being a good person? That kind of thing. And so what an older person, what I do for mentoring mostly is just giving them space to be seen and to confirm that they are on the right path, and that they are doing a great job, or if they're not, maybe, you know, suggesting another way, or showing them the consequences of a particular path that they're going down, so that they at least sort of see, okay, this is not so much that, you know, this is going to happen in a bad way, but just to follow out the consequences of things, because youth tend to be in the moment, right? And they don't think how this small insignificant thing that I'm doing right now in my mid 20s is going to affect me at 45, that kind of thing. Or how, you know, putting something out on social media that's foolhardy is going to come back and, you know, bite me in the butt 10 years from now when I want that super duper job or whatever. And so really, you know, it's just being that voice of reason, and but also giving them the space to voice their doubt and their fear. Because I think in society, we social media has given this false sense that everybody has to be with it and together and know what they're doing. And look at me and I'm wonderful, when that's just a false front.
Yeah.
And to have somebody who's not your parent, right? Not your, you know, your contemporary. So not your friend who's, you know, competing with you, and not your parent who, you know, wants best for you and may absolutely actually hinder you. Oh, honey, are you sure you should do that? But somebody, right. Somebody who's willing to actually say, okay, well, let's follow this out. What would happen if you did this? And be non-judgmental about it. And that's that's really, you know, it just to let them voice their doubts.
So after a brief interlude of my computer breaking down, one of the things we were talking about, Diana, was the notion of, you know, when I think about the notion of the wise woman and the crow, one of the places I access that from is from like Celtic shamanism and druidry and that kind of thing. And, you know, back in those times, of course, generations were much more intertwined through family, and that obviously we're talking about vastly different times, but I think we exist in a society now where, you know, the definition of different strata of age and generation has never been quite so strong, you know, as in there being quite big gaps or, you know, obvious gaps kind of thing. So I guess my question is, you know, what is the place of intergenerational kind of mentoring and relationships now? And, you know, is there space for kind of like for reverse mentoring, you know, that kind of mentoring from youth up to kind of older people, as it were?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, this world is evolving so incredibly fast, especially from the technological aspect. And, you know, I can only speak for myself again on this, where I can't keep up with it as fast as, say, a youth can. So whereas, I mean, my kids started in kindergarten, you know, on computers. I didn't even pick them up. I didn't even get access to a computer until I was in my 30s, because they didn't exist. So it's a second language for them. And it's just, you know, it's like another arm. And so they pick up things quicker and jump on things quicker than an older person would. They're on a platform, a social platform, years before we even know it exists, kind of thing.
Right.
Like I've yet to be on TikTok, but
we can change that.
So I look to youth absolutely to help me stay relevant in the world. And that's a good way of putting it. They keep me relevant in the world that is now.
Yeah.
But what the older person does for the youth is keeps them connected to tradition. That was tough. Yeah. Tradition. And maybe also speaking, but because that is something that has really gone by the wayside. It is that connection of tradition of where do you belong in society, that safety of your tribe. The tribes have scattered. Used to be that, you know, you knew everybody in your neighborhood and your best friend used to live just down the street. And, you know, you saw grandma every Sunday for dinner. Well, you know, for my kids, my parents, as soon as they were retired, they bought themselves a motorhome and took off and traveled the world. So there wasn't that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so, youth didn't have a, at least, you know, don't get as much contact with older folks as they used to, you know, parent, they take off and they get retirement homes in other places. And that continuity, that glue that keeps family or tribe together is not there anymore. And it's so important because, you know, a young person, they may be confident, they may be somebody who can go out in the world, but they still need that, I don't want to call it a safety zone, but at least a soft place to land, someplace that they know that there's people there who get them in and see them and will listen to them and their doubts and their fears. When we're, as opposed to just going out there in the world thinking that they're, you know, going to slay the dragons and and take on the world kind of thing, because, you know, that's not always the case.
No, absolutely. So if you were able to wave a magic wand, as it were, and kind of to foster those connections, as it were, to bring the benefits of those intergenerational pieces together, how would you do it? What would, you know, in today's world, what would the magic wand way be?
You know what? It's really just making time. It really is making time and reaching out and inviting. I mean, you know, if you said to, you know, if you said to somebody who was younger than you, hey, let's meet for coffee. Let's make a time. And not just go, hey, we'll meet for coffee someday. You go, let's make a time. I'll meet you on Thursday, 1 o'clock. It's really as simple as that. But we're all so busy. Mm-hmm. We're all so busy. And so really it's just being cognizant and making the time to reach out. It could be as simple as a quick text. Hey, thinking about you. How was your week this week?
Right.
And I think society has become a mass of individuals, because this generation has, my generation and subsequent younger generations have, revered individuals' rights.
Right.
Right. And so we are now a whole society of individuals. And so we're all in our little pockets, you know, with blinders on, living our lives. And yet human beings crave connection. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that people don't understand that, in the sense that they may feel it, but they don't have a word to put to it. It's that. And the pandemic has really shed a light on that particular thing, because not only are we all little individuals, but now we are literally sequestered in, you know, our little boxes, our little homes, you know, and so it's really brought that to the forefront. And so really if I'm going to wave a magic wand, it's going to be that, is connection. Okay.
I love that. So coming into the last couple of questions, as it were,
sure.
Because I consider you to be part of that wise woman archetype. If you had up to three pieces of wisdom to share with women coming into this kind of crone era, as it were, in their life, as it were, and maybe they kind of just had, or they're in the middle of their quote unquote midlife crisis, as it were, what wisdom would you give them?
Well, the first thing I would suggest is, especially for women, is to make connections. Find that small group of women, like-minded women, to keep connected with. Mm-hmm. And that's strictly from, factual-based. Women will live healthier and longer if they have a group of like-minded individuals to connect with. But not only that, it gets you out of your head, and it gets you, you know, it's like I said, it gives you that sense of you're not alone. Mm-hmm. The other thing is women need to understand, especially the baby boomer age group, is they were trailblazers. So they blazed a trail for the subsequent generations coming up. And their job is not done yet. They need to complete the trail. And it's so important, because let's assume you're 60 years old today. If the average age group right now, age of a woman dying, I think, well, in Canada at any rate, is 84. So that's 24 more years that you're going to live, right? Mm-hmm. Are you going to just sit there rocking in a chair? No, you've got health. You've got some money, or at least, you've got security of comfort.
Yeah.
You know, it's your job now to leave that legacy of that trail that you blazed. So what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with all that knowledge that you've acquired and all that, you know, just life lessons that you've acquired? Mm-hmm. It's almost your responsibility for the baby boomer generation to now sort of synthesize that lifetime of experience and trailblazing and give it back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that.
And the only other thing is, understand that you're a master. You know, I was just thinking about this before you and I started talking. You know, the story that you need 10,000 hours to become a master in whatever modality you choose. Well, by the time you were 60, you've already lived 500,000 hours, right?
Right.
So don't you think you'd be a master of yourself by now? You know, so. Take that and, you know, absorb that in, that you are the master of yourself, that you are the queen of yourself. You're sovereign on your own rights, and you have definite beliefs, and you have definite pieces of wisdom and knowledge. And don't be afraid to stand your ground and, show yourself for who you are. That alone, if you do that, you are leaving a legacy.
I love that. And if there was one piece of wisdom you could give for maidens and mothers, as it were, and I realize that's a big, big gap. Mm-hmm. If, you know, I know typically the younger women you're mentoring are in their late 20s, early 30s kind of stuff. If you could give them one piece of wisdom, what would it be?
Well, you might be surprised, but it's going to be very traditional. Okay. Mm-hmm. Especially for the mothers, but, for the maidens, and by the way, maiden doesn't mean that, you know, you're virginal or whatever. It just means you're not married. Just means you don't have children. But you know what, when you are young, that is the time that you plant your flag in the ground. Mm-hmm. Right. So don't be afraid to just try things. Just try things, have adventures, go out in the world. They always say the things that people regret when they're dying is not that they worked more, is that they didn't experience as much, that they didn't spend time with people. So don't be afraid to plant that flag in the ground. For a mother, and this is where it's going to be really traditional, is when you have children, you have to understand that for a set of time, it's your responsibility to shepherd that person to become a decent human being. And you have to understand that you need to leave that individual aspect of yourself behind, that maiden aspect of yourself behind, temporarily, at least for the first 5 years, and focus on that child. You have one shot to raise a decent human being. You can't go back and do it. So, a lot of women, you know, they have their year of maternity. At least here in Canada, you get a year of maternity, and then they go back into their careers and they leave their children off to daycare. Mm-hmm. And in that respect, I'm very traditional, because when I had my children, my attitude was I didn't have children to have somebody else raise them. And so I chose maybe not to have the nicest house, and maybe not to have a holiday every year and not have the brand new car and blah, 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 blah. Because I knew that those first 5 years of their life was going to set their foundation for the rest, their morality, their self-belief for the first, you know, for the rest of their lives. And so I took that responsibility on myself, not the daycare lady. So in that respect, you know, I'm probably going to have a lot of people go, I mean, but that's just, we have the ability to choose to have children now. It's not like, oh my God, I had sex, I got pregnant, now I'm stuck with a kid. We purposely choose to have children now. So we, you know, we plan, we, you know, so plan the first 5 years of being with them. That's my advice for that.
I love that. So, okay, Diana, where can people find out about you, find out about your work? And kind of what's next for you, as it
were? Well, my website is croneconfidence.com, and you can go there. And I put out a blog a couple times a month. I'm on Facebook under Crone Confidence. I'm on Instagram at Diana Fragman and Twitter at Diana Fragman as well. And what's next for me? You know, Chris, that's a really good question. And one of the things that's been a theme this spring for me is under the perspective of congruency, harmony and balance. And really what it is, you know, back to, it's checking back in on myself again and what it is that I truly want, mm-hmm. and how I want to live and how I want to offer that out into the world. And so I'm taking the next couple of months of just exploring that again. You know, I actually was downstairs yesterday cleaning off my my work table in my studio room, and you know, I want to delve into art a little bit again. But it's really, you know, I want to show people that you can empower yourself and other people just by being yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so you and I have talked about it. We both are, you know, firm believers in getting closer to the earth, getting to, you know, back to Mother Nature. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge aspect as well, because we both see the need to be connected to the earth as well as just to other people. That's another component of it, is that connection of to the earth, you know, and the universe as well. It's all one. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what I'm exploring. And I'm exploring that and I'm offering that out into the world.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, just want to say thank you so much for not only joining me on the Sacred Wild podcast, but for being one of my guiding lights and for someone who keeps me on the straight and narrow, as it were, and keeps me honest. So thank you for bringing your gifts into the world. It's really an honor knowing you.
Thank you very much. And you do know it works both ways, right? You're that guiding light and that, you know, hammer for me every once in a while as well. So a velvet hammer.
I love it. Brilliant. Okay. Well, there you go, everyone. That was Diana Fragman of Crone Confidence, my witchy sister all the way from British Columbia. And thank you for listening in, and we'll see you next time on the Sacred Wild podcast. Bye for now. Thank you so much for joining me on the Sacred Wild podcast. I really hope you enjoyed this episode and got something meaningful out of it. And if you did, please consider leaving a review on iTunes. Those reviews really help us out and they're what keep us here. Also, please make sure to hit subscribe and share this podcast with your friends and loved ones. And with that, many blessings, and I look forward to seeing you next time on the Sacred Wild podcast. Bye for now.